Usually, when we talk about a medical diagnosis or going to the hospital for a treatment, there is this comforting expectation of absolute precision, you know?
Right, yeah, it feels like engineering.
Exactly. Like, you fall off your bike, you break your arm, and the x-ray shows that jagged white line on the screen. And the doctor just points straight at it.
It's a clean, visible, and totally binary process. I mean, the bone is broken or the bone is intact. The mechanics of the human body are just laid bare.
Yeah, and we naturally crave that visibility, right? We want our medicine to be neatly categorized. But, well, step into the world of alternative therapies, specifically energy healing. So modalities like Reiki or therapeutic touch.
And suddenly that reliable x-ray machine is just utterly useless.
Completely useless. And, you know, you've probably heard of these practices. They often carry a reputation for being a bit, well, woo-woo or deeply mystical.
Yeah, conjuring up images of crystals and incense and those sorts of New Age retreats rather than clinical medicine.
Spot on. Yet if you walk into some of the most prestigious, fiercely science-based hospitals in the world today, places like the Cleveland Clinic or OHSU,
Oregon Health and Science University,
all
right?
right, you will actually find these exact practices quietly woven into their patient care programs. So, you know, what happens when prestigious hospitals use therapies that don't even show up on a scan? What is the actual truth here?
Well, we are looking at the absolute definition of diagnostic muddy waters. I mean, this is a space where ancient esoteric traditions are just crashing headfirst into the rigid world of modern clinical trials.
And the friction between the two is producing a massive amount of public confusion.
Massive.
So our mission for this deep dive is to basically cut through that confusion for you. We've pulled together a huge stack of recent data to impartially decode what is proven, what is moderate, and what remains, frankly, completely unverified.
Yeah, and straight up, we're not here to validate mystical claims, nor are we going to just dismiss ancient traditions out of hand.
Exactly. We're simply going to look at the numbers and the clinical reality.
Yeah.
And to start making sense of this, we have to look at the sheer unexpected volume of research that actually exists.
Which is detailed brilliantly in a 2025 scoping review. This was published in the Journal of Integrative and Complementary Medicine, or JICM.
And the scale of the research landscape they uncovered is, well, it's the first major surprise, really.
Absolutely. Because for decades, the prevailing assumption in mainstream medicine was that energy healing simply wasn't being subjected to serious scientific scrutiny, like at all.
Right. But the 2025 JICM review completely shatters that myth. The researchers systematically scoured medical databases from their inception all the way through to January 2024, and they found heaps of data.
353 peer-reviewed interventional studies.
353. And crucially, we're not just talking about loose observational surveys where people fill out a questionnaire about how they feel.
No. Out of those 353 studies, 255 were randomized controlled trials.
RCT.
Right, RCTs. And they investigated a huge spectrum of practices. So there were 88 studies specifically dedicated to Reiki, 71 examining therapeutic touch, and dozens of others covering everything from Qigong to distant healing.
And they tested these interventions on vastly different populations too, ranging from perfectly healthy volunteers to patients actively recovering from major surgery to people undergoing grueling cancer treatments.
But before we dig into their findings, we should probably define what these researchers even mean when they use the term biofield.
Good point, because it sounds incredibly esoteric.
It does. But across all these different modalities, the underlying theoretical assumption is that a subtle energy field surrounds and penetrates the human body.
Okay.
And practitioners believe that illness or stress causes blockages or imbalances in this field. So by hovering their hands over or, lightly touching the patient, they can manipulate or restore this energy flow.
Which, again, sounds really out there, but the headline figure jumping out of the JCM review abstracts is quite striking.
It really is.
Nearly half of these studies, 172 of them, to be exact, reported positive results in favor of the biofield therapy across the various outcomes they were looking at.
And that is the statistic that often ends up in those glowing social media posts or news articles claiming, science finally validates energy healing.
Right, but wait a second. Let's unpack this. If we have 255 randomized controlled trials, which we always told is the undisputed gold standard of clinical science, shouldn't this debate be completely settled by now?
You would think so, yeah.
I mean, we don't need 255 controlled trials to prove that paracetamol relieves a fever, do we? So if half of this massive pile of evidence points to a positive result, why is the broader medical community still so deeply divided?
Well, because the problem isn't the quantity of the studies. The problem is the severe methodological inconsistency within them.
How so?
Imagine trying to evaluate the effectiveness of a new diet plan, right? But every single participant is given a completely different set of rules. So some fast for 2 days, some eat only vegetables, some just skip dessert. And at the end, they all report feeling better.
Right. So you have a lot of positive data, but you have no idea what actually caused the improvement.
Exactly. You can't pinpoint the mechanism. The JSCM review points out that the energy healing research is plagued by this exact lack of standardization.
Meaning the scientists aren't comparing apples to apples.
Not even close. First, you have the issue of dosage. In a pharmaceutical trial testing an antidepressant, the researchers know exactly how many milligrams of the drug the patient is ingesting every single morning.
Down to the microgram.
Right. But in these energy healing trials, studies frequently fail to standardize the exposure. Like, one trial might consist of a single 15-minute Reiki session, while another trial involves a full hour every week for 6 weeks.
And I imagine the qualifications of the people providing the therapy are just as varied.
Incredibly varied. The studies often fail to define the healer's training clearly at all. I mean, is a self-proclaimed Reiki master with 20 years of full-time clinical experience providing the same intervention as someone who took a weekend online course and printed a certificate?
Wow. Yeah, the data simply doesn't differentiate.
It doesn't. And then we hit the biggest confounding variable of all, which is the testing environment itself.
Because these sessions rarely happen in a sterile, fluorescent-lit laboratory, right?
Exactly. Practitioners naturally want to create a healing atmosphere. So they dim the lights, they play soothing ambient music, they might use aromatherapy diffusers or, you know, incorporate gentle, comforting touch.
Which sounds lovely if you're trying to unwind after a hard week. But from a rigid scientific perspective, it is a total nightmare.
It makes it virtually impossible to isolate the variable. Think about it. If a patient's heart rate drops and they report feeling significantly less anxious, was it the manipulation of their invisible biofield energy?
Or was it the simple fact that they were lying down in a quiet, dark room, listening to the sound of ocean waves for an hour?
While someone paid close, attentive care to them.
Exactly. Because of these massive environmental and dosage inconsistencies, the JICM review notes that the broader field is riddled with low to very low evidence quality ratings.
And that is the crucial takeaway for you, the listener, if you're researching these therapies. When a flashy headline claims science proves energy healing, the underlying landscape of that data is significantly messier than the headline implies.
Yeah, you really have to dig deeper.
Right. To find any real truth, we clearly have to abandon the broad landscape and look at highly controlled studies where all those relaxing extras are just completely stripped away.
We have to isolate the variable. Mm-hmm. And to see how that is done, we can look at a really rigorous 2024 meta-analysis focusing specifically on anxiety.
Okay, let's get into this one.
So this 2024 paper examined 13 highly controlled studies encompassing 824 patients in total. And these researchers knew they had to test the therapy directly against a placebo. But how on earth do you engineer a placebo for a biofield? I mean, with a pharmaceutical trial, it's straightforward. You give the control group a sugar pill.
Right.
The patient swallows it. Their mind expects to be cured. But there's no active chemical ingredient. But how do you fake a Reiki session when the therapy involves a person physically moving their hands over you?
It's quite clever, actually. Researchers solved this using a brilliant methodological setup called sham Reiki.
Sham Reiki.
Yeah. They recruit an untrained actor or research assistant. Basically, someone with absolutely zero knowledge of energy healing, no belief in biofields, and no training whatsoever.
Okay.
And they teach this person to simply mimic the exact physical hand positions of a real Reiki master.
Like a highly sophisticated clinical game of Simon Says.
Spot on. The patient lies on the table, completely unaware of whether the person standing over them is a highly trained Reiki practitioner or just an actor quietly holding their hands in specific shapes.
So the environment is identical. The time spent is identical. The level of quiet human interaction is exactly the same.
Exactly. The only missing element is the intentional manipulation of the biofield.
That isolates the human connection from the supposed energy transfer perfectly. So when we strip away the music and the incense and look only at these highly controlled sham trials against real practitioners, what actually happens to the patients?
Well, the evidence here is fascinating, and it requires very honest framing. The effect sizes are real, but they are moderate.
Okay, moderate.
Yeah. A perfect example of this is a well-regarded 2017 pilot study by Baldwin and colleagues, which was highlighted in these reviews. They focused on a highly clinical population, specifically patients recovering from the severe stress of knee replacement surgery.
Ouch. That is a situation where the body is in acute trauma.
Oh, it's a profound physiological stressor.
Mm.
So Baldwin's team compared actual Reiki against sham Reiki alongside a standard quiet time control group.
And what did they find?
They found that the group receiving the actual Reiki had significantly reduced state anxiety scores compared to the sham group. And this wasn't just a marginal difference. They recorded a genuinely large effect size of 0.93.
Wow. For context, an effect size of 0.93 is considered substantial in psychological research. It means there was a very clear, measurable difference between the actor simply hovering their hands and the trained practitioner actually doing the work.
Yeah, in that specific, highly stressful clinical context, the real Reiki clearly outperformed the fake Reiki. However, there's always a however. When the 2024 meta-analysis applied grade criteria to the broader pool of 13 studies, the nuance of the overall field became apparent.
Let's quickly define grade for the listener, just because it dictates how medical guidelines are actually written. GRADE stands for Grading of Recommendations, Assessment, Development, and Evaluations.
Right. It's essentially a ruthlessly strict scoring system for scientific evidence.
Yeah, it doesn't just look at whether a study had a positive result. It evaluates how robust the architecture of the study was in the first place.
Exactly. So if a study has a brilliant result, but only tested 10 people, GRADE aggressively docks points for the small sample size. If there's a risk that the researchers weren't properly blinded, GRADE downgrades the quality of the evidence.
Makes sense. So when this strict framework was applied to the 2024 anxiety meta-analysis, what happened?
They found that for clinical, highly elevated levels of stress and depression, the evidence for Reiki outperforming a placebo was high.
Meaning, if someone's nervous system is deeply overwhelmed by severe illness or trauma, the actual energy healing appears to have a measurable edge.
Yes. But for normal, everyday levels of anxiety, the evidence quality dropped to low to moderate.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. If a person is simply a bit stressed from a busy day at the office, the sham Reiki and the real Reiki perform virtually identically. Furthermore, many of these highly controlled studies still suffer from relatively small sample sizes, which obviously limits how broadly we can apply the findings.
So the effects are certainly measurable above a placebo in clinical populations, but they are absolutely not a magic bullet.
Definitely not. To put that in perspective, the physiological markers in these studies, things like heart rate variability, cortisol levels in the blood, and blood pressure, they do shift. They show a genuine activation of the parasympathetic nervous system.
Right. Think of the nervous system as having two main gears. The sympathetic nervous system is your accelerator. It drives the fight or flight response, mm-hmm. pumping out cortisol and adrenaline when you're stressed or in pain.
And the parasympathetic nervous system is the brake pedal. It's the rest and digest mode where heart rate slows, muscles relax, and the body focuses on repair.
And energy healing consistently presses that brake pedal. But the overarching data shows that the measurable drop in anxiety is generally smaller than what a patient would experience from established first-line clinical treatments.
Like cognitive behavioral therapy or SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are your standard anti-anxiety and antidepressant medications.
So the controlled evidence shows a real moderate benefit for anxiety. But we need to shift our focus a wee bit here, because while anxiety is a massive issue, the primary reason millions of people seek out alternative therapies is chronic, debilitating physical pain.
Yes, and this is where the clinical reality of these treatments gets truly fascinating.
Which brings us to the highest level of government health evaluation. The National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, or NCCIH, regularly publishes comprehensive evidence summaries to guide doctors.
And for chronic pain management, they strongly recommend a variety of mind-body practices. They explicitly endorse yoga, mindfulness meditation, and cognitive behavioral therapy.
Because those therapies have massive, undeniable bodies of rigorous evidence proving they alter the perception and management of physical pain. But when the NCCIH evaluates Reiki and energy healing for physical pain, they hit a wall.
A brick wall. They explicitly state that there is simply not enough high-quality research to support its use for physical pain relief. The evidence is currently insufficient to claim that manipulating a biofield can fix a physical ailment in your joints, mend a torn tissue, or heal a diseased organ.
And this contradiction is what makes the topic so compelling. The top government experts look at the data and officially declare insufficient evidence for physical pain. Yet, world-class elite medical institutions, places we mentioned earlier, like the Cleveland Clinic and OHSU, they are explicitly offering Reiki to their patients.
It seems incredibly counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Totally. Why are elite science-based institutions adopting a therapy when the physical pain data is fundamentally weak?
To understand their rationale, we have to step out of the sterile laboratory and look at the brutal realities of clinical care, particularly in places like oncology wards or post-surgical recovery units.
Right.
Places like OHSU and the Cleveland Clinic are adopting these therapies for two intensely pragmatic reasons. First, energy healing is entirely non-invasive and carries virtually zero physical risk.
Right. The patient isn't ingesting a novel chemical compound that might interact with their other medications.
Exactly. They aren't undergoing a secondary surgical procedure. The absolute worst physical side effect a patient might experience from a Reiki session is boredom.
Which, in the medical world of first do no harm, passes the safety test with flying colors.
Spot on. Second, and most importantly, these hospitals offer it strictly as a complementary therapy. If you read the patient literature from the Cleveland Clinic, they are meticulous with their wording.
How so?
Reiki is never positioned as an alternative or a replacement for conventional first-line treatments. If a patient has a tumor, they are still receiving chemotherapy and radiation. If they have severe clinical depression, they are still being prescribed SSRIs and therapy.
So it's an add-on. A supportive measure, never a substitute. But if it doesn't cure the physical source of the pain, what is it actually doing for a cancer patient or someone recovering from knee surgery?
It addresses the complex nature of human suffering. Pain is not just a biological signal. It operates on a biopsychosocial model.
Okay, break that down for us.
When a patient is in a hospital bed, battling a severe illness, their physical pain is massively amplified by their psychological terror. The anxiety about the illness spikes their cortisol. Their muscles physically tense up around the site of the pain.
Right.
Their entire nervous system goes on high alert, which scientifically lowers their pain threshold. The physical pain actually feels worse because the brain is locked in a state of panic.
Wow. Anyone who has dealt with a chronic injury knows exactly what that loop feels like. The fear of the pain feeds the pain itself.
Exactly. And in a clinical hospital setting, a Reiki session interrupts that loop. It may not shrink the tumor or mend the fractured bone, but it profoundly helps restore a sense of peace.
Which is huge.
It is. Patients consistently report getting a better night's sleep after a session. It radically reduces the psychological distress surrounding their illness by activating that parasympathetic rest and digest response.
So by treating the anxiety, the patient's subjective experience of their physical pain often dramatically improves. The muscles finally unclench.
Yeah, improving a patient's quality of life and lowering their systemic stress has immense tangible clinical value. The doctors at OHSU or the Cleveland Clinic aren't necessarily trying to validate the physics of biofields. Their goal is to comfort the terrified human being in the hospital bed.
Which makes total sense. So bringing all these threads together, what is the ultimate takeaway for you, the listener, trying to make sense of this landscape?
Well, the massive scoping reviews, like the 2025 JACM paper, reveal a field producing a mountain of data, but it's data that is heavily compromised by low-quality evidence ratings, small sample sizes, and wildly inconsistent methodology.
Yet, when we drill down into the highest quality placebo-controlled trials, like the rigorous sham Reiki studies highlighted in the 2024 meta-analysis, we do see that the effect sizes for clinical anxiety are entirely real.
Right. They are moderate, and they're generally smaller than established pharmaceutical or psychological treatments. But they are consistently measurable above a placebo for highly stressed populations, like we saw with the Baldwin knee surgery pilot.
So it is definitively not a standalone cure for physical disease, and the evidence does not support using it to heal physical ailments. But it has emerged as a remarkably low-risk, complementary tool for inducing deep relaxation and improving quality of life.
Which is precisely why major science-backed medical centers are embracing it. Knowledge becomes truly valuable when we place it in its proper context. An intervention doesn't need to be magical or mystical to be clinically useful.
Spot on. And that leads to a final provocative thought I want to leave you with, something to mull over long after this deep dive ends. We spent a lot of time discussing sham Reiki, that clever control setup where an untrained actor quietly mimics the hand movements of a healer.
Yeah, the actor with zero training.
Right. And while real Reiki outperformed it in highly clinical populations, in many of these studies, particularly for people dealing with everyday, normal stress, that completely fake session, produces a significant relaxation response too.
It did. The simple act of the placebo induced a measurable drop in physiological stress markers.
So it forces us to ask a much deeper question. Does it actually matter if the proposed biofield energy is real?
Oh, that's a great question.
Right. Or is it entirely possible that the simple, profound act of receiving dedicated, quiet, compassionate human attention, having someone just stand quietly beside you, focused entirely on your well-being, holding space for you to rest in a hyper-connected, chaotic world, is the actual medicine our modern, stressed-out bodies are starved for?
I love that. Maybe the clinical benefits aren't flowing from a mystical field, but from the radical act of human stillness.
Exactly. It's a powerful reminder that sometimes the most effective interventions are the most fundamentally human ones. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Take care of yourselves, and we will catch you next time.